Chapter 46. Temper, but the strain of another such effort would burst me. From Italy the Clemens party went to Munich, where they had arranged in advance for winter quarters. Clemens claims, in his report of the matter to Howells, that he took the party through without the aid of a courier, though 30 years later, in some comment which he set down on being shown the letter, he wrote concerning this paragraph, probably a lie. He wrote, also, that they acquired a great affection for Fräulein Dahlweiner, acquired it at once, and it outlasted the winter we spent in her house. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Number 1A, Karlstrasse, 2E Stock. Care Fräulein Dahlweiner. Munich, November 17, 1878. My dear Howells, we arrived here night before last, pretty well fagged. An 8-hour pull from Rome to Florence. A rest there of a day and two nights, then 5 1-2 hours to Bologna, one night's rest, then from noon to 10:30 p.m. M. carried us to Trent, in the Austrian Tyrol, where the confounded hotel had not received our message, and so at that miserable hour, in that snowy region, the tribe had to shiver together in fireless rooms, while beds were prepared and warmed, then up at 6, in the morning, and a noble view of snow peaks glittering in the rich light of a full moon, while the hotel devils lazily deranged a breakfast for us in the dreary gloom of blinking candles, then a solid 12 hours pull through the loveliest snow ranges and snow-draped forest, and at 7 p.m. we hauled up, in drizzle and fog, at the domicile which had been engaged for us 10 months before. Munich did seem the horriblest place, the most desolate place, the most unendurable place. And the rooms were so small, the conveniences so meager, and the porcelain stove so grim, ghastly, dismal, intolerable. So Livy and Clara Spalding sat down forlorn, and cried, and I retired to a private place to pray. By and by we all retired to our narrow German beds. And when Livy and I finished talking across the room, it was all decided that we would rest 24 hours, then pay whatever damages were required, and straightway fly to the south of France. But you see, that was simply fatigue. Next morning the tribe fell in love with the rooms, with the weather, with Munich, and head over heels in love with Fräulein Dahlweiner. We got a larger parlor, an ample one, through two communicating bedrooms into one, for the children, and now we are entirely comfortable. The only apprehension, at present, is that the climate may not be just right for the children, in which case we shall have to go to France, but it will be with the sincerest regret. Now I brought the tribe through from Rome, myself. We never had so little trouble before. The next time anybody has a courier to put out to nurse, I shall not be in the market. Last night the forlornities had all disappeared, so we gathered around the lamp, after supper, with our beer and my pipe, and in a condition of grateful snugness tackled the new magazines. I read your new story aloud, amid thunders of applause, and we all agreed that Captain Jennison, the old man with the accordion, had our lovely people, and most skillfully drawn, and that cabin boy too, we like. Of course we are all glad the girl is gone to Venice, for there is no place like Venice. Now I easily understand that the old man couldn't go, because you have a purpose in sending Liddy by herself. But you could send the old man over in another ship, and we particularly want him along. Suppose you don't need him there? What of that? Can't you let him feed the doves? Can't you let him fall in the canal occasionally? Can't you let his good dash natured purse be a daily prey to guides and beggar boys? Can't you let him find peace and rest and fellowship under Pier Jacopo's kindly wing? However, you are writing the book, not I still. I am one of the people you are writing it for, you understand. I only want to insist, in a friendly way, that the old man shall shed his sweet influence frequently upon the page, that is all. The first time we called at the convent, Pier Jacopo was absent. The next, just at this moment, Miss Spalding spoke up, and said something about Pier Jacopo. There is more in this acting of one mind upon another than people think. Time, He was there, and gave us preserved rose leaves to eat, and talked about you, and Mrs. Howells, and Winnie, and brought out his photographs, and showed us a picture of the library of your new house, but not so it was the study in your Cambridge house. He was very sweet and good. He called on us next day, the day after that we left Venice, after a pleasant sojourn of 3 or 4 weeks. He expects to spend this winter in Munich, and will see us often, he said. Pretty soon, I am going to write something, and when I finish it, I shall know whether to put it to itself or in the Contributors Club. That Contributors Club was a most happy idea. By the way, I think that the man who wrote the paragraph beginning at the bottom of page 643 has said a mighty sound and sensible thing. I wish his suggestion could be adopted. It is lovely of you to keep that old pipe in such a place of honor. While it occurs to me, I must tell you Susie's last. She is sorely badgered with dreams, and her stock dream is that she is being eaten up by bears. She is a grave and thoughtful child, as you will remember. Last night she had the usual dream. This morning she stood apart after telling it, for some time, looking vacantly at the floor, and absorbed in meditation. At last she looked up, and with the pathos of one who feels he has not been dealt by with even-handed fairness, said, Mama, the trouble is, that I am never the bear, but always the person. It would not have occurred to me that there might be an advantage, even in a dream, in occasionally being the eater, instead of always the party eaten, but I easily perceived that her point was well taken. I'm sending to Heidelberg for your letter and Winnie's, and I do hope they haven't been lost. My wife and I send love to you all. Yours ever, Mark. The Owl story, running at this time in the Atlantic, and so much enjoyed by the Clemens party, was The Lady of the Aroostook. The suggestions made for enlarging the part of the LD man are eminently characteristic. Mark Twain's 43rd birthday came in Munich, and in his letter conveying this fact to his mother we get a brief added outline of the daily life in that old Bavarian city. Certainly, it would seem to have been a quieter and more profitable existence than he had known amid the confusion of things left behind in America. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and Mrs. Moffat, in America. Number 1 at Karlstrasse, December 1, Munich, 1878. My dear mother and sister, I broke the back of life yesterday, and started downhill toward old age. This fact has not produced any effect upon me that I can detect. I suppose we are located here for the winter. I have a pleasant work-room a mile from here, where I do my writing. The walk to and from that place gives me what exercise I need, and all I take. We stayed 3 weeks in Venice, a week in Florence, a fortnight in Rome, and arrived here a couple of weeks ago. Livy and Miss Spalding are studying drawing and German, and the children have a German day governess. I cannot see but that the children speak German as well as they do English. Susie often translates Livy's orders to the servants. I cannot work and study German at the same time. So I have dropped the latter, and do not even read the language, except in the morning paper to get the news. We have all pretty good health, latterly, and have seldom had to call the doctor. The children have been in the open air pretty constantly for months now. In Venice they were on the water in the gondola most of the time, and were great friends with our gondolier. And in Rome and Florence they had long daily tramps, for Rosa is a famous hand to smell out the sights of a strange place. Here they wander less extensively. The family all join in love to you all, and to Orion and Molly. Affly your son Sam. 6. Letters 1879. Return to America. The great grand reunion, life went on very well in Munich. Each day the family fell more in love with Fräulein Dahlweiner and her house. Mark Twain, however, did not settle down to his work readily. His pleasant workroom provided exercise, but no inspiration. When he discovered he could not find his Swiss notebook, he was ready to give up his travel writing altogether. In the letter that follows, we find him much less enthusiastic concerning his own performances than over the story by Howells, which he was following in the Atlantic. The detective chapter mentioned in this letter was not included in the Tramp Abroad. It was published separately, as The Stolen White Elephant, in a volume bearing that title. The play, which he had now found riotfully witless and flat, was no other than Iman Wheeler, Detective, which he had once regarded so highly. The Stewart referred to was the millionaire merchant, A.T. Stewart, whose body was stolen in the expectation of reward. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Munich, January 21, 1879. My dear Howells, it's no use. Your letter miscarried in some way and is lost. The consul has made a thorough search, and says he has not been able to trace it. It is unaccountable, for all the letters I did not want arrived without a single grateful failure. Well, I have read up now, as far as you have got, that is, to where there's a storm at sea approaching, and we three think you are clear, out Howells in Howells. If your literature has not struck perfection now, we are not able to see what is lacking. It is all such truth, truth to the life. Everywhere your pen falls it leaves a photograph. I did imagine that everything had been said about life at sea that could be said, but no matter, it was all a failure and lies, nothing but lies with a thin varnish of fact, only you have stated it as it absolutely is. And only you see people and their ways, and their insides and outsides as they are, and make them talk as they do talk. I think you are the very greatest artist in these tremendous mysteries that ever lived. There doesn't seem to be anything that can be concealed from your awful all-seeing eye. It must be a cheerful thing for one to live with you, and be aware that you are going up and down in him like another conscience all the time. Possibly you will not be a fully accepted classic until you have been dead 100 years. It is the fate of the Shakespeares, and of all genuine prophets, but then your books will be as common as Bibles, I believe. You're not a weed, but an oak. Not a summer house, but a cathedral. And that day I shall still be in the cyclopedias too. Thus : Mark Twain. History and occupation unknown, but he was personally acquainted with Howells. There I could sing your praises all day, and feel and believe every bit of it. My book is half finished. I wish to heaven it was done. I have given up writing a detective novel. Can't write a novel, for I lack the faculty. But when the detectives were nosing around after Stewart's loud remains, I threw a chapter into my present book in which I have very extravagantly burlesqued the detective business, if it is possible to burlesque that business extravagantly. You know I was going to send you that detective play, so that you could rewrite it. Well, I didn't do it, because I couldn't find a single idea in it that could be useful to you. It was dreadfully witless and flat. I knew it would sadden you and unfit you for work. I have always been sorry we threw up that play embodying Orion which you began. It was a mistake to do that. Do keep that MS, and tackle it again. It will work out all right, you will see. I don't believe that that character exists in literature in so well-developed a condition as it exists in Orion's person. Now won't you put Orion in a story? Then he will go handsomely into a play afterwards. How deliciously you could paint him, it would make fascinating reading, the sort that makes a reader laugh and cry at the same time, for Orion is as good and ridiculous a soul as ever was. Ah, to think of Bayard Taylor. It is too sad to talk about. I was so glad there was not a single sting, and so many good praiseful words in the Atlantic's criticism of Deucalion. Love to you all, ears ever, Mark. We remain here till middle of March. In the Tramp Abroad there is an incident in which the author describes himself as hunting for a lost sock in the dark, in a vast hotel bedroom at Heilbronn. The account of the real incident, as written to Twitchell, seems even more amusing. The yarn about the Limburger cheese and the box of guns, like the stolen white elephant, did not find place in the travel book, but was published in the same volume with the elephant story, added to the rambling notes of an idle excursion. With the discovery of the Swiss notebook, work with Mark Twain was going better. His letter reflects his enthusiasm. To Rev. J. H. Twitchell, in Hartford, Munich, Jan 2679. Dear old Joe, Sunday. Your delicious letter arrived exactly at the right time. It was laid by my plate as I was finishing breakfast at 12 noon. Livy and Clara, Spalding, arrived from church 5 minutes later. I took a pipe, and spread myself out on the sofa, and Livy sat by and read, and I warmed to that butcher the moment he began to swear. There is more than one way of praying, and I like the butcher's way, because the petitioner is so apt to be in earnest. I was peculiarly alive to his performance just at this time, for another reason, to wit. Last night I awoke at 3 this morning, and after raging to myself for 2 interminable hours, I gave it up. I rose, assumed a cat-like stealthiness, to keep from waking Livy, and proceeded to dress in the pitch dark. Slowly but surely I got on garment after garment all down to one sock. I had one slipper on and the other in my hand. Well, on my hands and knees I crept softly around, pawing and feeling and scooping along the carpet and among chair legs for that missing sock. I kept that up, and still kept it up, and kept it up. At first I only said to myself, blame that sock, but that soon ceased to answer. My expletives grew steadily stronger and stronger, and at last, when I found I was lost, I had to sit flat down on the floor and take hold of something to keep from lifting the roof off with the profane explosion that was trying to get out of me. I could see the dim blur of the window, but of course it was in the wrong place, and could give me no information as to where I was. But I had one comfort: I had not waked Livy. I believed I could find that sock in silence, if the night lasted long enough. So I started again and softly pawed all over the place, and sure enough at the end of half an hour I laid my hand on the missing article. I rose joyfully up, and butted the wash bowl and pitcher off the stand, and simply raised, so to speak. Livy screamed, then said, "Who is that? What is the matter?" I said, "Here ain't anything the matter, I'm hunting for my sock." She said, "Are you hunting for it with a club?" I went in the parlor, and lit the lamp, and gradually the fury subsided and the ridiculous features of the thing began to suggest themselves. So I lay on the sofa, with notebook and pencil, and transferred the adventure to our big room in the hotel at Heilbronn, and got it on paper a good deal to my satisfaction. I found the Swiss notebook, some time ago. When it was first lost I was glad of it, for I was getting an idea that I had lost my faculty of writing sketches of travel, therefore the loss of that notebook would render the writing of this one simply impossible, and let me gracefully out. I was about to write to Bliss, and propose some other book, when the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.